for us, it was really important to not even get offers from buyers who wouldn't be a good partner for our culture. We knew that there would be no partner like us, because there are no two agencies alike.
Welcome to the Insurance Refocused podcast, where we're highlighting real agent stories and how they are innovating to respond to the changes and challenges happening in the independent insurance industry. My name's Lindsay, and I can't wait to introduce you to my amazing co-host, who just so happens to be my mom, Carrie Wallace. Mom, how are you doing today?
I am having a fantastic day. How are you doing, Linz?
I'm doing good. It's been a good day filled with a lot of good topics and brainstorming going on. So it's been a good one.
Yeah, these are the days I love. A, I get to spend all day with you. And B, I get to invite people on that and record the conversation. Some of the people I talk to a lot, and actually get to talk about the things and share them with other people. So I got to tell you, I've been waiting for this one for a pretty long time. I am thrilled to welcome Matt Namoli to the show. Matt has been an incredible asset to me as I've built Agency Focus. He's been such a support, and I'm thrilled that you agreed to come on the podcast and talk with us.
Hey, Carrie, one of my best friends in the space, I accepted, probably took about 1.5 seconds to accept because I was mid gulp of water, you know. I love you. I love what you're doing. I love what you're about. I love how you handle your business. And of course, I wanted to be, you know, an advocate and a supporter of the podcast. I think it's a really cool project.
Yeah, it's super fun. And I love that we get to do it. I get to do it with my daughter. I mean, it's just fun. So yeah. We get to have some really cool conversations. This one will not disappoint. I can guarantee anyone who's listening, I would turn up the volume, get out something to write some notes with, because we're going to cover some stuff that maybe you didn't think about before. So Matt, when I first met you, you were an agency owner. You were someone that I actually saw as a very pivotal person that had a outward persona, but you were also very giving to other agents. And honestly, I didn't know that you sold. I really, and that's true for a lot of people. Like, I did not know, because you don't look like the average seller in this industry. You don't. Like, what's that?
Is it the red hair?
It's exactly the red hair. Yeah. So tell me how that came about, because I would have never guessed. Like, if we were sitting in a room and we're all chatting, I would have been like, yeah, he's definitely not a seller. He's a buyer for sure, but he's definitely not a seller.
Yeah. I think that, you know, like anything else in the journey of starting, growing the agency, you know, we were educating ourselves throughout every step of the way, right? We weren't experts at anything right off the bat. And, you know, you just grow as a business owner and an entrepreneur every step of the way. You know that better than anyone, right? Like, you just grow a lot as the more output that you drive. So, you know, we went into 2019 and it wasn't a game plan to sell the business. We had no intention. Now, I would say that we definitely weren't planning on passing it down to our children, which is a really cool thing too. It just wasn't part of our game plan and collective vision. But we didn't know when we were going to sell. It wasn't like we had this date in mind or an exit value in mind. And for us, it was more about, wow, like we've never actually took a step back and educated ourselves on what the value of the asset actually is, what selling actually could look like. Because I had a really boxed concept, very small box concept of what that is. I'm happy to share that. But it was important to go through the process of educating ourselves, just becoming more empowering. You know, it was an empowering process to just learn more about what that could look like. And in doing so, I think, you know, I had some big reservations as to why I wouldn't sell anytime soon. And I think part of the journey of education, of, you know, learning more about what that could look like from deal structure to partnerships to day two culture and all those things, slowly but surely removed some of those reservations, reduced it down to, this actually could look pretty cool. And it got to a point eventually where it made sense. So I think it was more of like a journey through exploration and, you know, what could this look like, and what could it look like on the backside? Because I just had no intention of stopping. I had no intention of slowing down. And I originally thought that selling would be one of those two things.
Yeah, people think selling is an ending point, but for many, it's actually a transition point, if you will, right? So I want to hear about this boxed view that you have, because I only know you on the other side. So, and we, you know, we have all kinds of conversations. So I'd love to know, like, in that moment, what was your view, and how did it change?
I thought that selling, this is back in 2017, 2018, I thought selling meant like a bag of cash, hopefully U.S. dollars in, you know, actually Bitcoin, looking back. But just a bag of cash and sitting on a horse riding off into the sunset. Like, I thought that was what selling meant. I mean, like, the finality of it was very, you know, that's what I'm saying about when I talk about, you know, the closed box, the tiny box, is like the finality of selling, and that it would be done. The journey would be over. Chapters 1 through 10 would be written, and I would be moving on out of the industry. And I was very grateful for being in the industry, finding myself in this industry, and super appreciative of the partnership I had with Zach and everything that we had built, the team that we had. Like, stopping was not an option. I wasn't interested in just like hanging it up. So for me, that was what that closed box was. And it definitely opened up through the educational process I went through.
So for so many, that's true, though. Like, so many are so tied to what today is, it's difficult to look forward and see what tomorrow might be and how it might be a pathway to yet another thing that you want to try or get involved in or do. And so I think it's crazy important to highlight that, because don't we all do that? Like, we're so mired in this is the only way to see this, and there's other options. And especially in today's market, for young owners that have a pathway in front of them where, you know, sometimes partnering, selling part of your agency, selling your agency and becoming part of a bigger whole can create two exit points, not one, and a lot of growth in the middle where you may not be able to do that yourself. So I think that it's important, no matter where you are in your business's life cycle, to be able to see that there's opportunity and you just have to weigh them and understand it to be able to know, is this the right opportunity for me? And am I even positioned well for the opportunity? Right.
Yeah. So, that's a great point. I think, and I'm very careful when I talk to anyone about our experience, my experience, to not come off that I'm an advocate for selling your agency. Just because it worked out and it was right for us doesn't mean it's right for everyone. For most people, it's not. And there's a lot of steps that you know, you need to go through, self-awareness and understanding of, you know, what you have and what your goals are, and making sure you align those two. But for us, it, you know, I had really, there was like three major, I guess, fears associated with fears, concerns of, you know, why we would never consider selling in 2019. And the first was, you know, I didn't want to stop, and I thought that selling was kind of the end. The second was we were growing pretty fast, and I didn't want to lose out on the value of the appreciated value of my asset down the road. And why would we just not wait until later on? And then the third was a big one, which was, you know, and maybe this was a little bit more ego-based, but it was, I liked being a business owner. I liked being a shareholder. I liked having equity. Like, that was in a private company that I can control. And I didn't see a reality going into 2019 where those three concerns could be removed. And for me personally, they, all three of them were based on deal structure and partnerships and the whole, you know, what we learned. But for a lot of people, they have concerns that are different, and those concerns can't be removed for the foreseeable future. But as you said earlier, you know, a lot of times the clock starts when you sell your business as like a whole new clock for the next chapter. And for us, I realized that, and then it opened up a kind of a new opportunity.
So when you were in the process of selling, and you had offers coming in, how did you determine what was important to you and your partner? Because you had a partner, right?
Yeah. Zach was my partner. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
Yeah, we closed our eyes and flipped a coin. For us, it was really important to not even get offers from buyers who wouldn't be a good partner for our culture. We knew that there would be no partner like us, because there are no two agencies alike. So there's no, I don't want anyone to think that there's a, you know, a perfect scenario with no, you know, restrictions and no, you know, issues. But there's certainly degrees of what could work and what shouldn't work. And we just didn't want to get offers from buyers who just absolutely wouldn't work. Because God forbid they gave us the best offer on paper and we chose them and then just lived in regret for the next 10 years that we just chose the right, wrong day two culture partner. And so that was important. So, you know, if we started with 15, 16, 17 different potential buyers, you know, we were able to kind of eliminate five or six right off the bat, just because they weren't right for us. You know, the big multi-billion dollar established, mature, backed agency, whether public or private, you know, they're good. They're really the right fit for certain sellers. For us, that wasn't the right fit. For us, the right fit happened to be an earlier stage company that was in like inning two or three. But for a lot of sellers who just want to go back to selling, they just want to go like be a producer again. They just want to sell insurance. They like doing that. They like the commissions. They like, you know, the hunt, and they just don't like the HR and IT and accounting and management and people and HR and everything else that is like required of running a business. For them, it's really helpful to work with a partner with a buyer that's. It has a ton of infrastructure and multiple layers of management and a big footprint, tons of resources, right? And for others, it's just not a fit. For us, that wasn't the right fit. So we kind of eliminated those right off the bat. And that way, we only had engagements and discussions and received offers from buyers that could be a good fit on day two. If that answers your question.
Yeah. So how did you educate yourself? Because it's overwhelming. Like, there's a lot of options out there. There's a lot of things. Like, how did you guys, you're running a business that's thriving and growing, you're leading teams, and you found the time to actually educate yourself and go down this path. Where did you turn?
Yeah, we, a lot of different directions. We asked agency owners that had been, you know, in the space for a long time, you know, their recommendations and advice. I actually talked to big agency buyers directly, and basically saying like, I'm not comfortable. I'm not planning on moving forward, but I'd love to get your feedback as to what this process entails and what steps I should take. We talked to, you know, different advisors in the space, consultants in the space, you know, M&A advisors and investment banks. And so we talked to a lot of different quote unquote experts or people that at least had a ton more experience than we did. And that helped to educate ourselves in terms of, how long does this process last? You know, what steps should we be taking now? What steps do we not need to take now? You know, what kind of thing, what is a pro forma? Why is that important? You know, how do we actually adjust things on a go forward basis and get credit for that? And like, you know, what's the health of our business relative to some of the, you know, our counterparts and competitors, and, you know, what kind of buyers are out there? You know, what, you know, what's the difference between PE backed buyers and non and banks and local and regional, and the advantage and disadvantages of both? And then, are all PE the same, or do they look different? You know, what does that deal structure look like? And so that was part of the educational experience. It's partly like looking inward to our business, and then a lot of it was looking outward to like, what are the options and what's the process entail?
I'll tell you, Matt, that's a time consuming process to talk to all those people and actually consume it and then refine it, think about how it impacts all of you. So from the time you started educating yourselves to being on day two, what time frame was that?
Yeah,
what was that evolution?
I would say it was just under a year, frankly.
What?
I think it was like the first 6 months was just getting the lay of the land. You know, if I put it this way, if I knew you back then and could have asked you a bunch of questions, I think we could have done it in about 4 months. But I did not know you, and you know, you could have answered a lot of the questions that I had back then. But we probably spent the first 6 months just doing a ton of research and getting a lot of, you know, gathering a lot of information, insights, and then the actual process of preparing the business and presenting the business to the right parties, having all the conversations, finally reviewing all the offers, going through the diligence, that was probably a full 6 months end to end.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think because you guys never had the thought process that you were building this business as a legacy that would go to the next generation, that you ran your business differently and it positioned you to have the option at that time? Do you think that that had anything to do with it, or, you know?
It possibly. I think we would have probably run the business the way we ran it, just by nature of who we were. I think we both had the same level of creative juices, the same level of competitive juices, the same level of sort of, you know, expansion and desire to kind of grow and create impact that you know, we probably would have done the same thing. But that is a really good question. Maybe we would have looked at it a little bit differently if my kids, when I started the business, I had kids, which I didn't. If they were much older and they were in middle school or high school, maybe I would have looked at an exit a little bit different. Maybe I would have, you know, built the business a little different.
You know, there's just so many agencies that have multi-generational, and there's this, I don't want to call it pressure, but there is a tendency, if you're second generation, then you at least think about a third generation. If you're first generation and you're just starting out, maybe not, but I think somehow that sets an agency on a path, and it really matters how you run your agency, what options you have. There's no two ways around that. You guys clearly were growing the agency at a significant pace. That puts you in a different class than agencies that are growing under double digits and all of those things. So, you know, I think this whole thing, the reason I wanted to talk to you is because I just want to set expectations. So the expectation is, don't talk to the first buyer. Get educated, number one. Know what's most important to you is also very important. And it's actually the number one thing that I start with an agency. Tell me why you're engaging me. Like, why are we having this conversation, and what is most important to you? And if someone can articulate that, it actually cancels out a lot of the noise because it allows you to focus. So we definitely talked about that. But what about the expectation of what comes next? How did you get ready for that, and what was it, and what did you think it was going to be?
Yeah, so speaking to, I think, the two first concerns I talked about, which was, you know, not stopping. I didn't want to stop. So, like, I wanted to, if anything, pick up the pace, or at least have a new goal in mind and reestablish that end zone. And the second was, you know, I really wanted to capture the future value of the business because we were growing fast. And all that in mind, with, like, I didn't want to pick the wrong partner and then not like the time that I knew I was going to have post acquisition. So, you know, some of the process early on when we were actually evaluating different potential partners, it came down to, like, sitting with potential buyers and, like, actually, are we talking to the CEO, CFO, you know, CRO, head of M&A? Or are we talking to, you know, a representative, a junior rep, or someone who tossed out a letter of intent in 4 days? Like, you know, that made a really big impact. And I think that even if we had gotten the best potential financial offer from one of those, the latter group, I think we would have probably still geared towards someone we felt comfortable sitting across the table with. And some people, you know, flew out and met us, and others met us in person, had some virtual sessions. But that really actually had a huge impact. You know, looking back, could we relate? Could we connect? Would we want to be doing business together? You know, because we knew we would be doing business together. So, we really want to make sure that was going to be a healthy relationship, at least for the most part, right? I mean, there's always going to be some friction. And then when we actually finally made the decision and we needed to, you know, tell the team and share, and we were getting close to the close, I think that was an area where most people that I've talked to over the years have a question, you know, like, how do I actually do that, right? That's a pretty big moment, and I don't want to scare people. And in looking back, we handled it the best we could have, and it certainly didn't go over, you know, 1,000% the way we wanted it to, but it went over as good as it probably could have. We were very transparent, said that we found a partner that we wanted to grow with, that they were in the, you know, second, third inning of their journey, that they had more resources, that they had a game plan to become much, much bigger than we could ever on our own. And we wanted to take that as the next chapter, and that we did all the diligence up front to make sure that A, no one's job was going to be eliminated. B, everyone was going to get bonuses. C, you know, health insurance, if anything, was going to be improved from what we had. And if not, their compensation would be increased to accommodate for that. D, you know, that their job opportunities moving forward maybe could grow even more because they're a much larger organization, which ended up happening. We had a lot of people on the team at GNN end up going into corporate marketing, HR, other places that now working for a company of 2,500, 3,000 people versus 30. And so, you know, a lot of that went over well, but we were also very transparent. I guess my recommendation to anyone going through the process is to be extremely candid with, we've done as much due diligence up front to find the right partner, not just for us, but for you. But we could also be wrong. And there might be speed bumps. There actually will probably be speed bumps. And to just work with us and talk to us and engage with us and know that we're doing it for the right reasons. And I think that was key. Then once we actually got on the other side, I think then, you know, the reality hit in and, you know, hit home with what day-to-day would look like. And a lot of what we expected came true, which was very reassuring. And some stuff didn't. And that's just the way that I think you have to go into these transactions, is to know that do as good of a job as you possibly can vetting out your partner and make sure it's the right fit, and know that if 80 or 70% of what you hope the life would look like post-transaction occurs, then you're winning.
Yeah, for sure. Because change is difficult and change is unpredictable. Like, you can do all the things you want to do, but at the end of the day, you know, day two is the beginning of something new and you got to work at it. And it's kind of like any relationship, right? I mean, it's just, it is difficult to dot every I and cross every T. I will say that, right?
Oh yeah. And impossible.
Impossible. So there's a slide that I use when I'm talking about contemplating the next owner of your agency and what things you should be thinking about. And typically I'm talking about internal versus external, and external, you touched on, not all external options are the same. You have selling to an agency, you have selling to private equity, and not all private equity. That's not one bucket. That's about 100 buckets. Like, mm-hmm. They all look and feel different. So the slides I ask is, in the agency, all the agency owners in the room, what do you think the number one thing is most important to the highest majority of agencies? And it says things like legacy, name on the door, employees, customers, you know, whatever, but the payout, earnout, the actual price, or working for another entity. And 9 out of 10 people will guess right what is most important to the majority of people. What do you think is the answer is, Matt? What do you think?
I would say taking care of the team, or, you
100%
know.
Of the time. 100% of the time. Yeah. They typically will flip-flop between my team or my customer, but they are one or two, and mm-hmm. everyone in the room is saying that number. That typically is what's most important. Mm-hmm. What's most underestimated, and you haven't given it thought, and it causes the most regret, is working for another person, because you are an agency owner and it's hard to imagine someone else working for someone else once you've worked for yourself. And so I think it's really important what you said is, are you sitting across from someone that you can work with? Do you connect? Can you actually see yourself? And is that the person you'd be working with, or is it just a representative of a company you'd be working with? Because oftentimes you're not talking to the people you're going to spend day to day with. You're talking to someone else, and then you go to day two and you're like, who's this dude? Right?
I think that's a great question that needs to be asked more, but, you know, from the seller, is what is my day to day work look like? Who am I reporting to? Am I reporting to somebody? And who are they? How frequent would I be connecting? What's technically being taken off my plate? What will I continue to make decisions on? For us, you know, a lot of those questions illuminated the fact that we really needed to continue to sort of control a little bit of our day-to-day. Like, we didn't want to be completely outsourcing everything, because I think we really kind of had a special thing going internally. And so for us, it was less important to offshore and offload and more important to maintain, you know, the control as much as we could. And those questions are extremely important. They're just as important, if not more, than what does your earnout structure look like? How do you evaluate your multiple? Where is your stock? And depending on the potential buyer, if those things exist. But yeah, I think the day two culture piece is, you know, what am I going to be doing on a day to day basis? And some sellers really do want to no longer be an owner and no longer make those decisions. And I think for them, it's a little bit easier to find that right partner because they're pretty clear. But to your point earlier, there's a lot of different PE-backed firms, varying levels from 50 million in revenue to 4 billion, right? And some of them own a percentage of your business. Some of them own the full asset and acquire it and give you back stock in the parent company. Some of which full cash offer and you buy back stock. There's so many variety of, you know, of different buyers in the PE space that you need to ask those questions very, very well up front to identify what does my day two look like.
You know, I love that you just said that because oftentimes I'll get, what is a typical structure of a purchase? And I'm like, wow, that is one loaded question because I don't know. What are the, like, there's a lot of different ways a structure of a purchase can go. And it really depends on who the buyer is, who the seller is, what's most important to those people, and what the a million factors are that make them either a good fit or a bad fit. So there is no typical. Now, can I tell you, here's the things you should consider? Sure. But it's like, what's the typical kid behave like? Are you kidding me? Like that's an impossible answer. Right?
I have three young ones and none of them are the same. So I question if they're all mine just because they're so different, but yeah, it's very much the same. You know, there's a lot of variation out there, a lot of variation, and variation from local and different levels and PE versus bank versus, you know, super regional agencies. And so there's a ton of variety. It speaks to the importance of doing your upfront diligence, making sure that those questions are asked. Yeah.
So looking back at, not even during the selling process, but I want to go back even further, like going back to when you were in running the agency, doing the day-to-day, weren't even thinking about selling. What advice would you have given yourself back then when you were in it?
Yeah, this is going to sound so like we planted this, and I actually shared this on a different podcast too, but I think that, you know, if we had hired a fractional CFO, you know, or even a full-time CFO, you know, in 2015, 2016, it would have relieved a lot of anxiety and stress around forecasting and projections. And it would have helped us a little bit in part of our planning towards our goals. Cause we had these growth goals. We had, you know, what life would look like in 3 years with the team, you know, what that picture was. Sometimes we overextended and at the wrong times of the year based off of when our renewal cycles were. And that probably wouldn't have happened if we had someone who was their full-time role is to really evaluate your finances and make sure you're making the right decisions at the right time. So I think that, you know, if we had worked with someone like you, Carrie, I think we would have been in a really good position. Outside of that, you know, I've looked back and Zach and I have talked about it. We never acquired ourselves. We, you know, we were just growing organically. Mm. And part of me had wanted to scratch that itch and acquire smaller agencies and play that same arbitrage game and do the whole thing. But I don't think we would have possibly been able to do it well, given how much we had to dedicate to organic brand, marketing, sales, et cetera, recruitment, team management, everything. It would have had to been an entire different division, and it would have been well capitalized division with entirely different operation setup with migration teams and merging, you know, just a lot of different differentiation. And sure, I think more established businesses that have a lot of free cash flow that can deploy that capital towards, you know, not waste, but investing in people and processes that might not turn into, you know, that boomerang effect of revenue down the road. That would work really well with those kind of organizations. Not a lot of those out there. And so I think you can be really good at one thing and it's hard to be really good thing at twice. So I know people who just acquired and they did that really well and then they migrated their teams and that's how they grew. And so I think, yeah, I wouldn't have changed anything else.
Yeah. It's, Well, first of all, thank you. That was a very nice and not a planted thing, obviously. But I think, you know, people watch what other agencies are doing. And I think it sometimes is a dangerous thing because you got to know your strengths and know the, be able to weigh, like, listen, I made this decision and this allowed me to perform in a certain way. I could make other decisions, but being able to weigh those and make an informed decision is super helpful. I think sometimes agencies don't just trust, this is what my core strength is, and lean into it as hard as you can and make it as efficient and as profitable and as successful as it can possibly be. If you dabble everywhere and then the opportunity arises, you might not be at the optimal level that you need to be, and it limits your choices. So, but having someone to help weigh that is helpful. Having a partner that allows you to help weigh that, just really asking yourself, there's a lot of things you can do, but you know, you guys clearly knew what that was for you, right?
Yeah. For us early on, we realized that, I think it was like our fourth week in business in February of 2010. And we were in this little tiny, almost like a cubby the size of an office in the most remote place. Like, you could not find us, even like our significant others couldn't find us. Like, it was in the middle of nowhere, shoebox. And this random Wednesday, someone knocked on the door and walked in, and it was three roofers, and, you know, people that like did roofs for a living. Their business was nowhere to be found either. So this was like, if looking back, it was the worst possible walk-in roofers that, and we didn't speak the same language. You know, like it was that bad. And we were so excited, and we figured out how to write the business. It was our first E&S policy. And, you know, we were so excited. It was pretty expensive. I think we had a claim within 30 days. I think the policy canceled 35 days later. Like, it was an absolute mess. And we quickly realized that, like, that's not something we should be doing, right? So part of that, you know, evolution is identifying what you really shouldn't be doing, and then, like, never touching it again. And then really evaluating, right? Being self-aware and evaluating what's working, what's not. What's not working is something we should kill, and what's working we should deploy more resources towards, more attention, because your time follows attention. And I think, you know, when we realized that home buyers and people purchasing real estate was really like a really good fit for us, we just went all in on it. And it would have worked with any other niche, but that just happened to be the one we chose.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Matt, obviously you know this. I could probably talk to you for 3 days and never scratch the surface of this topic adequately, but I really appreciate that you came on and shared your story. If someone wants to talk to you, like, they're contemplating this, they're thinking about educating themselves, going through the process, learning from other people, doing what you did. Like, if they want to reach out to you, how do they reach you?
I would say I'm very reachable. I think they can engage on LinkedIn and send me a message. They can find my email. I've got, you know, my emails are all over the place. They can send me an email, set up a time to call. I think I have a Calendly somewhere, so I'm sure that could be found. But anyone who wants to, you know, DM me or send me an email or give me, you know, reach out in any way, I'm pretty reachable. And I'm always open to have conversations. I had one this morning with an agency owner in Texas that, you know, had specific questions about his business. He might not be in the mode to sell for 10 years, but it was a fun conversation. And, you know, I think he walked away with a little bit more empowerment, at least, you know, feeling a little bit better about the process and understanding what he needs to do. So I'm always open, and I love those conversations. This business and industry has been just so good to me, and I just want to continue to invest back right into it and not go anywhere.
I agree. And if someone's listening to this, hear that. Like, you don't have to be ready to do something to start educating yourself, because time is a gift, knowledge is a gift, and it only creates more options for yourself. So I hope they do reach out to you, Matt. Okay. I guarantee you, by doing this, you helped a ton of people think about it differently, maybe figure out some of the options for themselves or the things that are most important to them, which is probably the hardest piece of this, is really figuring out what is, you know, what is the path forward based on what's most important to me and not all the different noise that's out there. So thank you for coming and spending time with us.
Really, thanks for having me. Thanks for having me, both you and Lindsay. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for tuning in to the Insurance Refocus podcast. If you enjoyed the episode, please be sure to hit subscribe and leave us a review so you'll never miss us. Want to learn more about how Agency Focus can help you grow your agency?
head to agency-focus.com or email Carrie directly at carrie@agency-focus.com. If you need to get in touch with me, feel free to shoot me an email at lindsay@agency-focus.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you next week.